Hey, we're here at Microsoft filming In the Code. We're going to get started in a minute, but first, let's meet the team. All right, welcome everybody. We're here at Microsoft. We're kicking 3 days off of building a really exciting application for a really wonderful client.
About 3 years ago this month, Humanitarian Toolbox was an idea that we could help software developers give charity effectively. This is not an adrenaline-driven project. This is about planning and preparedness and saving as many lives as possible by never letting them get into trouble in the first place.
The key of what we do with Humanitarian Toolbox is we focus on how can we get volunteers involved and not just have them do manual labor tasks, but as somebody who's a software developer, as somebody who has technical skills, there's more you can do, there's more impact you can have. And so what we're gonna focus on here is an application that's around preparedness, but around being ready. It just doesn't feel as sort of naturally good as when you, say, rush into a burning building and pull someone out. But what you do when you prepare, what you do when you make someone ready, it's worth 15 to 30 times as much. So in effect, your hour of coding is gonna be worth 30 hours of someone preparing, which is gonna be worth 900 hours of someone responding. So there's a huge leverage value in what you're doing.
I think a lot of people know about the American Red Cross, but don't know really all we do. So of course we go to a lot of disasters, and this is kind of what people know. They see these photos. What we're trying to do from a preparedness aspect is to kind of put the disaster response kind of component out of business, so to speak. We're trying to get smoke detectors into people's homes, you know, who don't have them. And that's where this kind of app can come in to make getting this program working much more effectively.
The reality is you're gonna spend 3 days dedicating your time working on an application, something that's gonna be carried forward by others. So this is your choice to be here and spend that time. So thank you.
Let's get started. Let's write some code. Let's do it.
The week prior to us getting together, I met with the PMs. We discussed what feature sets we wanted to highlight, what technologies we wanted to highlight.
Doing any project in 3 days is a challenge. We had a client that knew what they wanted and they came to us and we talked about it for 3 days and planned it for probably 5 days. And then we came in today and we actually started coding on it.
I really believe in the journey that we're taking here. We obviously can't be the owners of the whole journey end to end, but we can be partners with Humanitarian Toolbox to start the journey, start this adventure, and hopefully everybody wins at that point.
With any application, we have the database or where you store your data. In the middle, we have our web API that serves the data from the database to the ASP.NET application, as well as the Apache Cordova mobile application.
Everything is down here in SQL, in SQL Server. And what we're doing on top of SQL Server, mostly inside of the web API tier, is that we have EF. We're actually using EF to pull the database data out into the web API controllers. And then what we're doing is we're building out view models. And then those view models are actually serialized to JSON down to the Cordova app. And that's what's happening on the web API side. Where we're having one thing that we're going to need to do different than this is that we have this geo query that we're gonna need to do. And the geo basically is going to have to use SQL's spatial functionality, because what we're gonna do is we're gonna say, given a latitude, longitude coordinate, and a size circle, we wanna get back all the activities that happen to be inside that circle, so that if Pranav is looking for something in his neighborhood, which I think is uptown Seattle, he's gonna wanna basically stay within that area and be able to go to certain places.
Downtown Seattle?
Downtown Seattle? Yes. Is there a difference?
Yes.
What's uptown?
The non-cooler part of
the non-cooler part, okay. Anyway, Seattle. So he wants to go around the cool part of Seattle. He doesn't want to get outside that cool zone. So he only wants to do activities in that cool zone, or his cool quotient's going to drop a little bit. Because we're going to have to do a spatial query against SQL, given three things: lat, long, distance. Get back everything inside that circle, and then that'll go this way, and then the Cordova app will display it, or the ASP.NET app will display it, depending on which client you're actually talking to at that time. So I'm going to hand it off to my homeboy Pranav, and he'll talk about the ASP.NET side of things, and I want to go code.
So right, so this part of our site is basically based on ASP.NET 5, so like one of the biggest improvements in ASP.NET 5 over the previous version was we combined both the web API and the MVC pipeline controllers routing into a single base class. So we basically have the same site where we can serve web pages and web APIs, which can be consumed by the Cordova app. This ASP.NET 5 app is right now targeting .NET framework 4.5.1. So as part of the site, we also want to be allow users to log in. So a user is going to come to the site, then he's going to either have an option of logging in via Facebook or Twitter or like Microsoft account, and we can add more like Google if we wanted to. So that's sort of the overall umbrella of the ASP.NET 5 web app. I'm going to let you talk about the Cordova side of the
house. Yeah, I mean, basically the hard work was already done by Brady and Pranav, so it's actually going to be the Cordova site. You know, JSON is a native, it's a great format for interchanging data on the web. So Cordova being web-based means that they just work pretty much out of the box. And using Ionic Framework actually, which is based on Angular, which also has really good support for displaying data based on JSON. So for us, it's gonna be primarily just integrating with this piece right here, so we get authentication working on our end as well. And then for any activities you have signed up, you can pretty much see it in your Cordova app and then have the three screens that we have work just fine.
Now that we've taken a look at the architecture, let's take a peek at the user experience behind the application. Day one of building this really cool application, it feels like you can't just go into an application blind though. There's gotta be some ideas that we had going in.
You're absolutely right. We definitely want a kind of plan of action. And so for us as UXers, we wanted to get in touch with the customer as soon as possible, get an idea of what their challenges are and what we're focused on and helping them deliver.
How fast do you go from talking about ideas to sketching to getting something to the customer and getting something back? How tight is that feedback?
Well, when you have 3 days, you go very quickly. Sometimes it can take a little bit longer, but Red Cross and the humanitarian project has been awesome at like knowing that we have only 3 days. So we're really kind of just, we throw out an idea. If it's not working, we move on.
So let's talk about some of the stuff that you've already drawn, maybe to get a feeling for what this is going to look like eventually.
Right. What we're focusing on is helping either volunteers or newcomers, or what we're calling visitors, figure out like what activities are available in their area as quickly as possible. But that's pretty much what the landing page is about. We go on to the next page here. This is as if you were to search, or from the landing page you were to click see more activities in your area, you'd be brought to kind of a search results page. Again, we're keeping it simple here. We've decided to kind of pivot on this notion of location.
This is really useful because as a developer, it gives you a really good sense for what we're storing it and how we need to surface this up. So right now we have three views, but the data is, a lot of it is shared across.
Right.
One is a query, and one is a detail, one is a list.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
So that's kind of what UX does, is what we look to do is we look at it from a very broad standpoint. So a lot of times folks think, oh, well, you're the designers here, so they're going to work on the logo and branding. We do that effort too. But it's really about getting down to the weeds, thinking about every single interaction a volunteer or visitor or campaign manager might have, getting down to the low level, starting to illustrate the data model, what kind of fields do we need to collect in the database and that sort of thing.
That's excellent. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us, and I guess we'll talk next time.
Yeah.
During filming, something happened that made us all reflect on what we were actually working on, and it became personal for all of us. Take a look.
One of our teammates is remote, and today there was a tornado warning in his area, and he had to go down to the basement.
I was engaged in working with the team, setting up the database, and I received a text message on my phone from my wife. We're under tornado warning, a tornado watch warning. We've got 15 minutes. So I took my other daughter to the basement, and I could still get on the wireless from there and on my phone, and we listened to the weather for the next 20 minutes, half hour. We're fortunate, two towns over is where the tornado actually hit, and and it sounds like they got hit pretty good. Going through that experience while I'm working on a product to help people who would recover from that experience really hit home with me, and it's something that it's almost it's a coincidence that I'll never forget.
I think what I'm excited about is anything any dev would love to do, and that's doing what you do for the purpose of making the world better. And I know it sounds cheesy, but you don't get the opportunity to save babies that often, you know. And if we can actually like enable volunteers to save babies or to save folks, I think that's pretty hot.
With a lot of developers and not a lot of time, we had to have a way to manage the work that we were all doing. Let's take a look at how we did it.
What we did is essentially created a Scrum template. We used Git as our source control. We created a bunch of user stories, you can see right here. And then we split those user stories according to tasks that people are just going to pick up, self-assign, and then start working on them. You can see here, it also allows you to do very nice Kanban boards that you can actually group by. For instance, we here have a bunch of work that's unassigned, but we have a view that shows you that groups by assigned to person. It's Brady.
Brady, you've lost some weight here. What's going on over here, dude?
And I'm the first one that has a done.
Oh. Nice. Dude, you're not.
Oh.
As I was saying, right, so you have all these kind of details. You can actually see the commit that happened. So this is Git, which you can see by the nice little shay here.
Yeah, I mean, I've only built stuff like for myself, and so I understood that this stuff existed, and so it's really cool to see that it's now online.
Yeah, well, actually, I even use VSO for my personal projects, where I'm the single developer, but I just find that the idea of, it's very, very low barrier of entry to start. If you have access to it, you're done. You can just open up the account, have projects on them, have source control, have work item tracking, have automatic builds.
And it's
very easy. It's very, very easy to get started, even for like a really, really small team.
What's nice is, as I look through these screens, this looks exactly like the stuff that I use in my regular day job here at Microsoft. I work on the Visual Studio team, or actually on the Web Tools Extensions team for VS. And we actually use a very similar approach to this. Now, our backlog is a lot longer,
right,
but it's kind of the same thing.
So let's click the X and let's see. So far, there's code in there. I know there is. Let's see what we got.
You have history.
Wow.
See, yeah, there you go. That's the Thursday stuff.
Yeah.
And now we're just starting to get, and it's cool to see like the collaboration, just sort of like the first check-in by Jimmy, then you, and then we have Karupa, yeah. Brady, and then we're gonna start to see a lot more stuff being checked in.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's exactly. Cool. Is there any?
We've already had an accident and a fix for the accident.
Nice. There's always, that's reality, folks. Well, let's get to work. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers. Things aren't always rosy when you're building software. You know that. We ran into some challenges as well. Let's see how we overcame them.
My name is Donovan Brown, and I am a senior program manager for DevOps. Dimitri reached out to me and was telling me that there's this project that they're working on where they're trying to help a nonprofit. They called me over today a little early. I was supposed to come tomorrow, but he said, is there any way I could come over today because they were struggling with build? I was able to get that rectified for them really quick. We're also having some integration issues with our Git repository, which I'm gonna go back in and troubleshoot. What we wanna do is just go down to the command line and say, can I clone a repo? Can I actually see the other repo that I'm supposed to? Because what we realized was there was just some misunderstanding of how the build system worked. We have hosted build. That means you don't have to install anything and we'll run the builds for you. And you can actually install your own agents as well inside of your own pool. Well, the pool was created, but there were no agents inside of it. So they kept getting this random error saying there's no agents to run your build. So what I came in and I explained to them that, hey, you can just run it right out of our hosted pool instead. Is anyone else, are you able to connect to the project? Because they're using some of the bleeding edge technology, that ended up not working quite as well either because those agents didn't have the necessary bits on them. And I actually stood up a build machine for them with the proper agent on it so that we could actually start running some builds. It's not saying there's no agent. It's saying that there's no agent that has the exact same demands that you have on this particular build. The bits we are using are very, very new, right? And what's really nice about our build system is that not only can we host a build server for you that can do 90% of the builds that you need, but you can stand up your own build server as well, because we can't anticipate all the tools you're going to want to use. I can then go back in and actually identify those tools as capabilities of this particular build agent. And then when I create my build definition, I get to put demands on my build definition saying, I demand that you have this version of this tool, or I demand that this tool at least be present. And our build system is able to look at the build definition and match your demands to the capabilities of your agent, regardless if they're hosted or one that you stood up yourself.
It was great to have a real expert like Donovan show us how to use the tooling a little bit better.
So what you have here is our dashboard. So as soon as you come into VSO, this is the first place you're gonna land, and it gives you a heads up display of all the information that's important to you as you start to monitor your project. As we put data in, we start to get this rich, nice data out. These charts are showing us data that the developers have been inputting in, work items, tasks, and those things. And as they start to complete them, and as they start to take ownership of them, we start to be able to generate these particular charts. There's another way that you can actually see that from the work tab. Kanban is really hot now. We've actually added a Kanban board to this tool so that you can actually see how we're progressing visually. We also have the ability to set WIP limits. As you can see, we're well over at WIP limit here.
So let's pause right there. I've never heard the term WIP limit. What does that mean?
WIP limit stands for work in progress.
Okay.
So developers have a tendency, I'm a developer, I get bored with items, right? I'll work on it for about an hour, I have 2 hours left, but I'm bored with that and I'll go grab something else. So if you were to look at a traditional burn down, I'm burning lots of hours, but I'm not really getting anything done. So what a WIP limit will force developers to do is get something done before you take something else. This is more for your high level macro type of work. But when we are actually working as a developer, we're working on an individual sprint. We also have a board for them as well. This board is at the task level. So each of the developers can actually see who it's assigned to by their picture, how much effort is it working on that, and then we can actually move this stuff across the board as well.
I think the cool thing here is that this is not like fake stuff. This is the stuff we're actually working on for
this
project.
This is all real data, absolutely. And the more you use the tool, the more the tool can get you out of it.
So tell us a little bit about the build and how you set that up and what it looks like here in VSO.
Okay, great. So if we look at the anatomy of this build, our build system is drastically different from what it used to be. It used to be XAML-based, and now it's a task-based system. It really gives you the ability to add whatever steps you need to your build to be able to perform whatever task you need. What we had to figure out yesterday, because we were doing our Cordova app, was exactly what we needed that build agent to do. So we installed the necessary components using NPM, and then we ran a series of command lines to actually compile our application. So the long part for this one was just figuring out everything that we needed to do to get this built. And once we got this build working, this is actually what we call a CI build, and you can tell that from the trigger tab. By simply checking this box, every single time a developer commits changes, this build wakes up and builds itself to verify that the developer didn't break anything. And once we got that working, by going back to the homepage, if it ever fails, this chart will tell us that it failed.
That's
and
cool.
Everyone will know. Absolutely. This is an application that has been instrumented in the past.
Awesome, so eventually when this application gets deployed, we'll add application insights to this, and then we'll be able to see what kind of information, for example.
Any information you want. You can even send your own custom telemetry to application insights. So let's say, for example, you just added a brand new feature. You can actually put markers in that feature, letting us know when someone used it, what page they were on before they used it, and if we deploy it and no one's using it, maybe we go and put some more marketing behind that idea, and then we can go back in and verify, did that marketing actually increase the usage of that particular feature or not?
That's awesome. I love seeing the way that VSO sort of takes you from idea to build to actually coding to build to know about your actual application.
We are the only vendor on the planet that actually has everything that you need to build a DevOps pipeline. We take you, as you said, from the idea to actually monitoring that idea in production, because we can use this data to go back into our product backlog and make sure that what we deliver next is really going to add value to our users based on their actual usage, not on my guessing on what they're going to be using.
Awesome. Well, thanks for spending some time
with
us.
My pleasure. Thank you.